From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of November, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of this half hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, ConAgra, by acquisition, is about to become the nation's largest private label food company. The Army Corps of Engineers has reduced the flow of the Missouri River. It could hasten the closing of the Upper Mississippi River to barge traffic at least headed to New Orleans. And USDA has asked a California court to consider the impact of some pesticides on endangered species. Dave Dickey will have all the details in a bit. Also this half hour, we'll hear our weekly winter months marketing terms definitions with Elaine Cubb. And in just 26 minutes, meteorologist Don Day will be here to look at the agricultural weather forecast on this Tuesday afternoon closing market report. It's public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
In Chicago, on a Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat at $8.73, up 24 cents today in December. That's a close and not a settlement price. July at $8.81, up 21 and three quarters. The hard red in Kansas City at $9.26.5, up 19. These are all closes. December contract in the corn pit back in Chicago, $7.59.5, up 12 and a quarter. The March at $7.63.25, up 12 cents. May futures there at 7.62, up 13 and a quarter, and July corn 7.53, up 12 and three quarters of a cent. Next year's December at $6.37.5 in the corn pit, up 8.5 cents. But the day, January soybeans on a close at $14.48, up 23 and a quarter. March at $14.38 and three quarters, 26.5 higher. The May futures, $14.10 and a quarter, up 18. July at $14.08 and a quarter, up 22 and three quarters. And the August soybeans at $13.82.5, up 20.5. November beans $13.11.25, up 15.25 for next year. Bean meal futures at $439.30. That's $439.30. It's a settlement price up $7.60. Bean oil at $50.12, up 85 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finish up the February at $132.32.5. A settlement price down 7.5. The Aprils were up 7.5 cents. March feeders at $149.90, down 20. And the lean hogs in the February at 86.72.5 on its settlement, 25 cents lower. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, $87.20 a barrel, down 54 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at 272.9. That's 0.3 cents higher. Ethanol in the spot month at 243.8, up 3.2. The difference between the two is 2.8 cents narrower than yesterday at 29.1 cents. Natural gas at $3.76.7, up 3.7. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.02, down 3.4 cents. Gold futures on the day, $7.30 lower at $1,742.30 an ounce, and the U.S. dollar at 80.4. That's up 0.15 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high of 36 degrees, a west wind, the southwest at 3 to 6, partly cloudy this evening. A low of 23 degrees, calm winds becoming westerly at 6 miles an hour. Then on Wednesday, sunny skies and a high near 43 degrees. And we'll have calm winds again tomorrow. Winds out of the south at 5 to 7. And Wednesday evening, it'll be mostly clear and a low of 28. Thursday, sunny skies and a high near 50 on a south wind at 7 to 11. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy and a low of 36. On Friday, mostly cloudy and a high of 51. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 42. Saturday, mostly cloudy and a high near 56. Saturday evening, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and 48 degrees. And by the time we get to Saturday or Sunday night, we'll have partly cloudy skies and a low of 47 during the day. Sunday, sunny skies and 60 degrees. Monday, partly sunny and 63. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour when we talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It is the 27th day of November. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers must be smiling today because the market rallied.
Yes, they are. Anybody we've talked to has been had quite a smile on their face. You know, we had a couple of the outside things. The leading slate of economic reports, the November consumer confidence hit a four-year high at 73.7. That added a little strength to everything along the ways, and the sales of existing homes rose 2.1% in October. So the outside markets give us a little wind on that today.
And Greece looks like it is coming around and maybe won't have to go into insolvency.
Yeah, you know, they finally got things straightened around. They lowered their payments a little bit and put it back in a more palatable type form of punishment to take to get back online, and I think that that's a good thing. And we like seeing that coming along and the world sort of stabilizing rather than continuing to fall apart.
Do we often think of Thanksgiving as a time frame when the market turns one from one place to another or sets a new direction?
You know, we generally, if we are down into Thanksgiving, we're generally on up into Christmas or vice versa, and we were definitely down on our way into Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. So how much of an uptrend do we have that's potential?
Well, you know, as we looked at sort of our resistance points and stuff here today, you know, the Jan beans basically closing at 14.50 was right up in the fifth resistance and whatever. So we're up in new territory here and have to look at that chart again to where we're going to go to. And we closed the March corn at 64 here today, and so that's up into its second and third resistance. So the corn projects on up to 72 here right now, Todd.
Up to, oh, yeah, 772, yeah? Uh-huh. So another, what, 8 cents higher for
another 8 cents, you know, for if it's our next next stopping point, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And is there fundamental reason for it to make that push?
Is there fundamental reasons? Boy, that, you know, we're looking at South America. Depends on which weather forecaster you want to read and pay attention to. You know, whether they are having some trouble with wetness in Argentina and whether they'll get all their corn planted and some of the delayed bean plantings for their second crop corn to get in and get down there. But we do have tight stocks in corn. You know, we're over a dollar over at the Gulf for corn right now, trying to get it down there. So even if we haven't seen a lot of export business, it's sure been a pretty good basis market.
And beans with their 24-cent rally, corn with its 12-cent rally, and it was a good day, but wheat was really kind of the leader, I guess, to the upside. They rallied 24 cents.
Yeah, of course, we got the last crop ratings of the year here. I mean, we won't get any more till spring now, but a lot of sadness talk about the way the wheat looks out west, some of the lowest ratings we've had in the last 20 years as far as wheat, some of the highest of the port of very poor ratings, and, of course, the talk of how there might be some self-imposed embargoes put on in the Russia, Ukraine, and that area as far as not wanting to let everything go out of that area. So, you know, basically we are looking at, and of course, we saw Brazil importing wheat from other places rather than just Argentina where they generally get it from because of the harvest delays, which their quantity and quality might be a little bit lower here with all the excess rain and the wheat yet to be harvested areas.
So if we put that all together, we have Argentine wheat that may have a quality problem simply because there was so much rain early on as they began their harvest process. I think they're, about halfway along now?
Yes.
And then we have a wheat crop in the United States and in the Black Sea area, which would be the winter wheat crop and sown this past fall, that's not in particularly good shape in either place.
No, not at all. You know, and it's just not, there's a lot of wheat that's not up out west, and there's a lot of wheat that they say is starting to turn brown. But, you know, we have to kill wheat a couple, three times before it actually is dead.
Yeah, I remember that. Wheat's one of those crops that you can kill once in the fall because it's dry, and then again because of winter kill, and one more of a time for a disease before we actually get to harvest, I suppose, right?
That's the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Anything on the livestock side that we ought to take up for the afternoon?
You know, I think that we're continuing to see, the livestock be just a little bit under pressure here. It's right after Thanksgiving, but as we get closer to Christmas, I think we're going to see a lot of meat usage.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You can hear him again at our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in a moment with today's Agricultural News.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, ConAgra Foods is buying private label food producer Ralcor for about $4.95 billion, which will make it the biggest private label packaged food business in North America. ConAgra says the acquisition will strengthen its overall position in the North American packaged food business. ConAgra today says that it will pay Ralcor Holdings Incorporated stockholders $90 per share, a 28% premium to its Monday closing price. The combined company will have total sales of about $18 billion annually. The deal is expected to close by March 31st of 2013 and needs Ralcor shareholder approval. The Army Corps of Engineers has begun reducing the flow from a Missouri River reservoir, a move expected to worsen low water conditions on the Mississippi River and potentially bring barge traffic to a halt within weeks. The cut in flow comes despite opposition from the governors of Missouri and Illinois and 15 U.S. senators whose states sit along the Mississippi. The Mississippi is nearing historic lows between St. Louis and Cairo, Illinois. Barges are already required to carry lighter loads, and the middle of the river could be closed to barge traffic if the water level at St. Louis dips below minus 5 feet. It was at minus 0.45 feet on Friday. EPA has asked a California court to dismiss a lawsuit that could ultimately affect the usage of hundreds of pesticides and other agriculture chemicals as they relate to endangered species. EPA said the suit did not identify specific agency actions in the course of registering ag chemicals that adversely affect endangered species. The court has scheduled a hearing for February 15th of next year. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says that China's economy is set to re-accelerate briskly in the next 2 years. The OEDC says China's growth, which has been recording double digits for years, will slow to a decade-low 7.5% this year, though, as a result of weak export markets and Beijing's efforts to curb surging prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Those programs and all of our ag programming, in fact, you can find on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, joins us. She believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices practices of the industry. Today, she helps us define the marketing words long, short, and grain position accounting. Elaine, let's start with defining grain position accounting.
Well, when you're talking about keeping a track of how much grain you have on your position, which is how an elevator would do it, you're talking about looking at each time frame and deciding whether you are long or short in that time frame. Do you own grain in that time frame, or do you need to source more grain in that time frame? So the way that an elevator would look at it, for instance, they might be long grain now in their inventory. They might be holding a lot of grain from the past harvest, but they may have obligations through March, April, May, farther out time frames that they are short and that they have already sold grain there, but they're going to need to buy in grain to cover that short position. So that's an example of how, you know, grain accounting is different for each time frame.
And then when you look at not just the time frames, but the position itself, can you define a long position and then a short position?
Yeah, and this is an easier topic, I think, for people in the grain markets to understand than investors that may not be coming into this from the grain market. Farmers are used to selling grain before they have it. You know that you can go out to the elevator right now and sell your 2013 production a year out already, and it makes sense because you know you're going to have that. But for stock traders, let's say, or investors who just aren't used to selling grain, to say that you are short a commodity doesn't really make a lot of sense to them, that they can go out and sell something that they don't presently own. But the way that the commodity markets work is that you don't have to buy something up front. You're just making an educated guess on whether the price is going to go up or down. And if you believe that the price is going to go down, you can sell high now and buy low later.
And in that case, you would take a short position.
That's right. That's called a short position. If you have sold a commodity or sold an asset with the intention of buying it for a lower price later.
And you actually don't have to have the grain at all.
Yeah, not at all. When you're talking about selling grain or selling grain in a position, you do have the intention of eventually owning grain that you will, you know, that you will use to cover that short position. But if you're investing, you can just sell a futures contract right now with the intention of just buying it back at a lower price later.
Yeah, and the important part is that you need to buy it back, because if you don't, eventually you will have to deliver grain and you will have to source some grain someplace.
Yes, exactly. One way or another, you will have to cover your short position. Yes.
And then a long position is the other side, which means you would buy a future on the idea that it might be going higher and you could sell it later and make money on it.
Correct. And that's easy to understand to an investor who may be used to buying stocks, for instance. If you buy some Johnson & Johnson stock, you are now long Johnson & Johnson stock. And with commodities, it's the exact same terminology. You're just long whatever you're buying. And that, again, is easy to understand in the cash grain markets. You own some grain, so you are long grain, and as long as you remain long grain, your investment position is that you are hoping to sell it at a higher price later.
Are farmers eternally long the market?
They are. For as long as they intend to continue farming, the very definition of being a farmer is you must farm something. You must produce some grain. So you know, as long as you intend to be a farmer, that you will be producing grain in 2013, 2014, 2015. So if you were going to write your cash grain position for all those years, you would be long in October, November, the harvest time frame of all of those years. You know that you will own physical grain at that time frame for all of these years of your life.
And end users are like ADM or Tyson Chicken or other places that might be using grains and oil seeds would be eternally short the marketplace?
Exactly, because they know for all of the years of their life that they will be using this grain, they're going to need to be using that grain every month. So a Tyson chicken producing outfit might have a grain position that is short a certain number of bushels every month that they know they will have to buy in to feed their chickens.
And the middle person, the elevator, can they do both?
They can do both. They can choose, if they have a bullish or bearish opinion for any time frame, to be long or short in that time frame. The exception comes in for co-ops that are owned by farmers and therefore have some sort of a, you know, they're basically obligated to take the grain from their farmers, and that's what they are being employed to do, or that's what they're in existence to do. And when they're obligated to take in harvest grain, for instance, then they can't really choose to be short at harvest when their farmer owners are telling them to buy grain.
Commodity broker analyst and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb. She joins us here on the Closing Market Report to define marketing words. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, on this Tuesday afternoon, it's time to check the agricultural energy markets. K-State's Dan O'Brien is with us. Thanks, Dan, for taking the time with us. You sent me a nice little PowerPoint display taking us through some of the basics of the ethanol situation. We start with prices and futures and trends, which we just sort of discussed a little bit, and what those were, and what the expectations were for ethanol futures prices through the summer and fall of 2013. Would you please take me through it?
Sure. You know, as you look at the structure of the futures for ethanol, really they're hanging right around 240 to 242, in essence, from December all the way out to July. And then we start to decline off into the fall, down to 231 in September, and eventually settling around 220. And again, that's quite a ways out there, and there'll be a lot of both optimism and pessimism before we get there, no doubt. But I think this is indicative of the idea that we'd expect some return to normal corn production in the coming year, and that the supply-demand forces would drive us towards a little bit lower price for ethanol by the time we got out there. So I think in this, and also when you look at the structure of new crop corn futures as well, you know, we see these types of situations where we're dropping off now off into the from December, closed today at 760 and a quarter for 2012, is down to 637 and a half in projected for fall of 2013. Well, again, that comes over into the ethanol market, and that lower prices would help to spur production, lower costs, and it would generally be, generally viewed as a positive thing, I think, in the overall industry for ethanol.
At the top of this show each day, I read the price of the RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, and the price of ethanol, and then I give the spread between the two. Can you tell me about one versus the other and what relationship they have?
Well, yes. Generally, the cheaper ethanol is relative to RBOB, the more affordable it is as a blend. I think the thing that stands out to me in looking at what's happened since June is that, gee whiz, on June 1st, we had a ethanol at about 47% of the price of RBOB. And then when our big concerns for drought hit, we got up to 95, 97, almost 1-to-1. And, of course, at that point, people that sell ethanol are getting pretty worried, you know, with regard to what that might pretend for them down the road for the affordability of ethanol and their profitability. But since then, we backed off to a more moderate level. Last numbers I calculated, Todd, about 88%, ethanol being about 88% the price of RBOB, and really a situation that's probably tenable in the longer run, but certainly not at a 1-to-1 relationship like we were looking at this past summer.
So it's not as great as it was to blend ethanol, at least if you're the ethanol-producing side of this coin, because you're not making nearly as much money.
Yes. You know, you look at the profitability numbers. Again, we're relying back on what's pretty standard model ISU numbers, and we've shown losses or loss to break even every month since January. And I think it's a testimony to the resilience of the ethanol industry that we're only down about 9% on production from what our capacity is. And so we've lost an average of 8 cents per gallon from January through November of this year, and November's about done. And when you look back at the last major upheaval and contraction in the ethanol industry back in December 2008 through May, we had a time period of 6 months of loss and 5 cents a gallon at that time. So quite a deal.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd.
Dan O'Brien of K-State. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
It's National Bavarian Cream Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1826, John Walker invented the friction match. The match head was ignited by drawing it through a fold of fine glass paper. In 1827, Horace Wyman was born. An American inventor, he held more than 260 patents relating to looms and textile machinery. In 1901, Clement Studebaker died. An American manufacturer, he founded in South Bend, Indiana, the Studebaker Brothers Manufacturing Company, what became the world's largest producer of horse-drawn vehicles. The company's motto, always give more than you promise. In 1943, Frank Lutz died. He is recognized by many as the leading U.S. entomologist for the first half of the 20th century. He taught that insects were an integral part of the environment, and he was the first curator of the American Museum of Natural History's Department of Entomology. And in 1984, Sylvan Goldman died. Goldman, an American businessman, ran a successful chain of grocery stores, and while a major owner of the Piggly Wiggly supermarket chain, he invented the shopping cart. By the way, he hired fake shoppers to wheel them around the store to encourage reluctant customers to see how useful they could be. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to take up the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Don, let's start out in your part of the world, or at least a little bit to the east of you. Talk about the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the United States, please.
Well, at least here in the short term, I don't have any good news. We're going to continue to see drier than normal conditions. We had some colder weather move in over the last couple of days, but the precipitation, while it wasn't bad, we were certainly hoping for more, and the only benefactors were in the northern areas. Some areas of Nebraska, South Dakota got some precipitation, but Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas still suffering from dryness, and that's going to be the case here for another week.
And it's probably going to continue throughout the winter months. It's really tough, I think, to build up any type of precipitation over the winter, right?
A couple things we got to point out. First of all, this time of year is traditionally, climatologically, one of the drier times of year. But we certainly, since mid to late October and through the month of November, haven't seen anything. I do see some weather pattern changes in December that offers maybe some hope for precipitation as we get into the next month. But at least here in the next week to 10 days, it's going to be a problem and a concern and something that we're going to need to watch. Wouldn't close the door yet on the season and saying that the rest of the season will go this way for them.
Speaking of closing the door on the season, did I see a warm-up in store for us here in my part of the world?
Yeah, in fact, most of the lower 48, the exception would be the Pacific Northwest coast, is going to be looking at a fairly mild weather pattern with really not a lot going on. Warmer air is getting pushed out ahead of a massive storm that's going to bring possibly record snows and rains to the Pacific Northwest from Central California up to Washington and Oregon. Now, eventually, and this is why we have some hope for the month of December, that's going to break off and head across the nation's midsection with the first system coming into the Midwest around Tuesday and Wednesday of next week.
And then turn your attention to South America, Brazil, and Argentina.
Well, as we look south, well, it looks pretty favorable for those areas. Both Brazil and Argentina have some fairly good chances for precipitation over the next week or two. It will likely have a fairly good coverage across both of those countries and both of those growing areas.
They're beginning to the growing season a little tough, but things have switched around, and they're looking nice now, I think.
That's how things are looking on my end as well.
Okay, thank you so much, Don. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There under the schedule or calendar tab, you'll find the Corn and Soybean Classic series of meetings that are set up for January and the December Farm Doc meetings. There'll be a link to each of those. Just cut and paste that one into your favorite web browser, and you can register today. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stewart. Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size.